This morning, the radio went off. I think it was actually Rhonda's alarm. And the first bit of news was 750 or so had been killed in the uprising since Wednesday in Egypt. And I said, I'm speaking this morning on escape from Egypt. I think everybody there would probably like to get out of Egypt. But we're going to talk about a different group that got out of Egypt. I'm going to move right along, and we may not get through all of it, but I put more on there than just... But we're dealing with Exodus is what we're dealing with. And the setting there is, of course, Egypt. And Egypt, if you didn't ever realize this, really is the Nile River. That's where everybody lives, along the Nile River. It's, of course, the longest river in the world. Over 4,000 miles, it goes way down into the southern part of, or at least toward the southern part of Africa and works its way up. Livingston, Stanley, they went and did a lot of exploration trying to find the beginning of the Nile River and that, the White Nile. 94% of the people live on the edge of the Nile. And when you think of Egypt, you're thinking of the Nile River. And you can see some of these are the older cities and the newer cities that dot that place. And that is only 4% of the land mass. So you say, what's the other part of the land mass? That's deserts, what that is. There's some oases, but most people live up in this Nile area, this delta area, and then along the river there. So you can keep that in mind. Here's a good, very graphic picture how close the sand is in some places there and how fertile it can become if you lived along, of course, fishing there. And there's some path and some growing there. But when you think of Egypt and its population, it is the Nile, and especially during Bible times there. When you think of Egypt, you think of the pyramids, of course, the Great Pyramid, Khufu Pyramid, and then other. And this is right outside of Cairo. This is where a lot of it's going. In fact, I was reading an article yesterday, and they called it the Giza District, and this is where this pyramid is. In this area where some of these uprisings are going on. So it's not really the place to be right now, but it would be. My dad has, and if I had more time, I would have brought. He was over there when he was very young, just out of Bible college, and a guy said that he could go up, and for I think $10 or $15, he would climb all the way up to the top and all the way down in 10 minutes. And so my dad has him on an old 16 millimeter, and I reduced it to a CD and or DVD, and you can see him climbing up. They didn't take all the footage, but you see him trying to get over these big rocks. Very interesting, very interesting. A question that you may have wondered, maybe you didn't wonder, but it's kind of interesting. Who was the Pharaoh, and when did the Exodus happen? According to time, it kind of varies. It could be anywhere between 1800 BC and 1400 BC. If you study the book of Usher and that, it gives you a better time. And I'm going to give you a better time, at least a biblical dating, and that's 1446 if you study it. And this verse kind of gives you the clue. You have to go all the way up to the Kings. It says, it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth month of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziph, which is the second month that he began to build the house of the Lord. Now, the verse is there to tell you when they started building the house of the Lord, but you can go back 480 years. And so it gives you a date, approximately 1446, because we believe Solomon built the temple around 966 BC. Now, that is not a problem, of course, for us. The problem is that the who deals with the Egyptian dating, because the Egyptians were very inaccurate, and they would shade things. I remember reading when I was doing some research for a class one time that I was taking, I was reading Herodotus, and he went down there, and he was interviewing, I believe it was that scholar, and he comes back and he writes, you sure can't trust the priests, because they don't tell the truth. They shade it whichever way they want to. And so it's very inaccurate, and so that gives us several that could possibly have been the Pharaoh. Three of them I put in here. During the 18th dynasty, a guy by the name of Amenhotep II was a good possibility. He was a great archer according to the hieroglyphics. He did not have, his firstborn did not follow as the king. And so that gives you another point that in a favor. And they dug up his mummy. That's what he looked like. He must have had a bad hair day, huh? And if it's this guy, then his grandmother, they have her temple there, and she would have been the one that pulled Moses out of the water. And it's just a neat little thing. You can study on all this stuff and more time. And if that's the case, if it's this fellow, then Joseph, when he came into Egypt, came in under the Hyksos, or the foreign kings, or shepherd kings. And remember that they took him in. Now, he was a foreigner, and he became number two man. And that would kind of put to dovetail why they did it. And also, after the Egyptians take back over from these Hyksos rulers, then why they have no interest in Joseph in that, because he would have been the part of that foreign regime some 300 years before. So that's a possibility. This guy's a possibility. The next guy that's a possibility was under the 19th dynasty, Merneptah, and he was the son of Ramses II. One reason he kind of favors into it, because they found his mummy, and his mummy has a very high salt content, as they've studied him. And they thought that could be him. This guy kind of follows, if you've ever watched the Ten Commandments, it follows, he has that kind of a life. And so they figured it might be him and that. And he's buried in the Valley of the Kings. Then the third fella, there's a book out that I've studied, and it's written by a guy by the name of Ted Stewart. It's called The Exodus Mystery. And he believes it's a guy by the name of Amenhotep IV, and which was the last pharaoh of the 12th dynasty. Now, you have to really say that the Egyptians were way off on their dates to be this fellow, but he gives reasons why he thought so, and the Egyptians really were not accurate with their dates. Some of the reasons why he had no heir after his half-sister, when he dies, becomes, or his wife, sometimes they would marry in between there, took over the throne. And so those are three possibilities. Probably was not Ramses who was in, wasn't that the guy's name in the... The Ten Commandments, they call him Ramses. Probably not him, but it may have been the son of Ramses II. Okay, we begin the book of Exodus, and before you get actually to them, you understand that they're in bondage. It says there rose a new king over Egypt that knew not Joseph. That's where kind of the idea, it could have been very easily that first king that I mentioned, Amenhotep. Why were they upset? Well, the reason was the growth. God had blessed them. Talk about having kids. They did a good job. 4.9% was their growth rate. And as they were going from a nation of 70 till easily well over a million, the Egyptians had a right to fear, because they said, what if they become an ally to our enemies? And so they decided, we got to get rid of them. First, they said, let's use them for slaves. And Exodus 1:11 says, therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. And those cities are, Pithom's there, just outside of the delta, and it's called Avaris now is the name of that area, but that is the Ramses of the Bible. And they still make brick like they used to back then. And even down into Africa, I remember having a teacher that talked about how they would themselves, they have these little forms and they'd make the brick. And this is a brick that came, it is marked with Ramses' stamp on it. So it comes from that era of time that they had dug up. This Ramses city has not really been excavated lately. Of course, you know, if you have an uprising every other year, it's hard to do anything like that. And who wants to go over there and take a chance at it, too? But those are some of the pictures of the area where they believe. It's called, it's a Tel Eldab, or Avaris is where that is. They're on the edge of Goshen. Well, the slave labor didn't work, so they tried birth control measures, but that didn't work either. The midwives were supposed to kill them, and they didn't want to kill babies. And it's good to find people that don't want to kill babies, whether they call them fetuses, which are still babies, or they call them babies that are born. And I love this verse, and it came to pass because the midwives feared God that he made them houses. When I read that, I just like that when it comes to it, that part. Okay, give me another click here. There we go. A little bit of preparation. You got to have Moses come on the scene. He was of the tribe of Levi, and his dad's name was Amram. His mother's Jochebed. He had an older sister, Miriam, and an older brother, Aaron. And he was born. His mom wasn't going to throw him to the crocodiles. That's what they said. The Pharaoh said, and she hid him 3 months, but at 3 months, he was yelling like a little 3 month or 4 month old or 5 month old, whatever. How old is your little girl this morning? We heard her hollering.
She's 9 months.
Okay. Well, she had pretty good lungs on her this morning. And so they could not hide him. And so, you know the story how they put them out into the area where the princess, Pharaoh's daughter, would come. And if you think about that, you wonder if that was maybe not planned. Because what mother would just stick a baby anywhere? Maybe there was a little bit of planning in there. I love that picture. That's out of that old little book that I would learn from. Maybe I can't remember the name of the storybook, but when I was a kid. And she finds him, and she names him. Pharaoh's daughter named him Moses because his name meant drawn out. And there's more to Moses because we don't really, in the book of Exodus, the next place we find him is he's 40 years old. But there was between him being drawn out at 3 months and 40 years, there's quite a history. And we believe that Moses became a great man. There's two areas where you pick this up. One is if you read the historian Josephus, he writes about Moses, and he says he was a great general and that he was a hero of Egypt. In the Bible, you get a little bit of intimation of this when Stephen is preaching, and he says, and he's going through the history of Israel and going to Christ. And of course, when he gets to Christ, they stone him. But Stephen says this, "And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and in deeds." So that would make a great miniseries on Moses and all the things he did in Egypt. But he turned his back on that, of course, and he becomes the deliverer. He thinks that he can do it by himself. And you remember the story how he slays the Egyptian who is beating up on a Israelite. And the next day he comes over, and there's two Israelites fighting. He said, "Men, don't fight." And the one guy says, "You going to kill me like you did that Egyptian yesterday?" And he realized that they knew about it. And so Hebrews tells the story a little way. It says, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." Some Bible historians believe that Moses may even have had a shot at being the next Pharaoh because he was in the household and being adopted in that. Esteeming, or at least possibly adopted, "esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." Well, I'm trying. I think, there we go. Let's go on there. Okay. So he failed in that human deliverance. He flees to Midian or Arabia, and he there dwells for 40 years. And you know what? He's there 40 years, and this area where he will also be where he leads the Israelites out. So as he comes out, those 40 years were not for nothing. And, you know, sometimes there's things come in our lives where we think, boy, that was for nothing. But God has it down the road. I heard a guy speak this week. We had a Bible conference at the college. Men from all over came, and this man was from Illinois. And he told how that he worked in a Bible college, and he wasn't the president, but he worked in a Bible college, and they went through real struggles. In fact, when he finally quit or resigned, he went off and pastored, he took all his files from years at the Bible college, and he burned them. He said, "I never want to do this again." And years later, not too many, 5, 6, 8 years later, a Bible college called him up and said, "Would you come down and be our president?" And he came to his wife. He said, "Now I understand all that I went through." He said, "Because back then I wasn't president." He said, "And I'm going to take everything that in my mind that shouldn't been done and make sure we do it right here." And he went on for, I don't know, about a decade, was there as president. But I'd never heard him tell that story. I knew his history, but I never knew he burned all his files. But here he is on the backside of the desert, and he's learning. And God is humbling him, but also he's learning this area. So he's prepared. He prepares him. And of course, he has the encounter with the burning bush on Mount Horeb. That's also Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is the peak, and it's also called in the Bible the Mount of God. We're not sure exactly where that is. Traditionally, it's right here. And they built a monastery called St. Catherine's. There's some people that believe it's over here. But I'll show you St. Catherine's here in a minute. But the fire, he saw this fire burning on a tree and the tree not being consumed. And so that got his attention. And here's another interesting thing. I know I'm throwing a lot of things out here that maybe are new to you, but it'll just give you thinking. God hadn't spoken for 400 years. The last time he spoke was Genesis 46 when he told Jacob, go down to Egypt. So they've been in Egypt that whole time, and God hadn't said anything to anybody. And now God speaks to a guy out on the desert 400 years later. So sometimes we just have to be patient. And it shows us an opportunity of patience. There's Mount Sinai, the traditional site, and there is St. Catherine's. By the way, that's also where they found in that monastery the Sinaiticus that was used later in the newer translations. And a guy by the name of Tischendorf was visiting there, and he saw a monk burning something in a wastebasket. He pulled it out, and he said, ooh, he said, that's an old manuscript. Some people say he wished he'd have burned the whole thing and been done with it. But he took that, and then he found more of it out there. They got it's an interesting place, all kind of old bones and different things in there. So God tells Moses to take off his shoes, and he's on holy ground, and then he tells them. Let's keep moving here. Moses gives 7 excuses. I'm going to take time because I got 10 minutes. But you can make a little Bible study of it. He says, I'm not fit. God said, I'll be with you. He said, I don't have any words. God says, just tell him I am. He says, I have no authority. And he said, I'll give you 2 signs. You can throw down the serpent and then the leprous hand. And of course, that got even Moses' attention. He said, I'm not eloquent. And God says, I made your mouth. I'll be with yours. He said, send somebody else. Here, my Lord, send him. And he said, I'll give you your brother Aaron. It's interesting, you know, he gives him his brother Aaron, but usually Moses is doing the talking. He doesn't leave it up to his brother. He leaves his brother, and they start building golden calves when they leave it to Aaron. He doesn't have a lot of backbone. He says, I tried. This is a little bit later after he gets down there. He said, I tried, and I can't. And God says, oh, you'll see Pharaoh's judgment. And then the 7th thing, he said, I'm not accepted by Israel or Pharaoh. And God answers, go tell them what I said, and you will be a god to Pharaoh. And so he does that. It's an interesting set of things there. So he returns to Egypt, and the Lord states his enemies are all dead, the ones that wanted him killed because of his intrigue and treason. And so he goes there. He has a little problem on the way. His 2 sons almost killed, but his wife steps in. Moses now is 80 years old. And then I was hoping to get through at least the battle with Pharaoh, because there's some interesting things here to bring out in Sunday school. Ancient Egypt is called the most polytheistic nation ever. They had so many gods. I mean, the Romans had a lot of gods. The Greeks had a lot of gods. And the Romans even had the god, you know, in case they made an idol, in case there was a god they missed. But the Egyptians, they made sure they named about all of them. They've dug up about 2,200 gods or goddesses that the Egyptians worshipped. I mean, you'd have to go to school to learn all of the gods. And they have found 200 separate deities in the pyramid texts alone. The gods often depicted a human body with some type of an animal head. That's the way they like to make their gods. And what this chapters 5 through 11 or so basically is the Egyptians' gods versus the true and living monotheistic one God of the Jews. Pharaoh's initial reaction to Moses' request, he says, who is the Lord that I shall obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go. He finds out who the Lord is. It takes a few months, some think about it, 10 months to a year for all the plagues to go through. Well, you have the problem with the bricks where he says he won't give them any straw. And then you have this promise renewed. And this is, you could stop and just teach a whole lesson on this and take time. It's the I wills. And God says, I will bring you out. I will rid you out of their bondage. I will redeem you. I will take care of you. I will be to you a God. I will bring you into the land and I will give it to you for inheritance. There was all those I wills. Well, as he comes in, Moses comes into Pharaoh's court. He's challenged by the magicians. And he throws the serpent down, and they too are good magicians, and they throw theirs. And the only problem is that Moses' snake eats theirs. And of course, they had a god to the snakes. His name was Buto. In fact, the magicians can imitate the first two plagues, but after that, they come to Pharaoh and say, hey, this guy's not a magician. This guy, it's God doing it. You need to listen to what's going on. Pharaoh doesn't, though. The 10 plagues were an attack on Pharaoh and his gods, and the answer, God answers that question, who is the Lord? And notice that word Lord, that's Jehovah, and that is the personal name for God. Who's this personal God? And that's what people today, personal God, they don't want a personal God, because if you have a personal God, then you answer to him. He can tell you what to do and what not to do. And people, they like to believe in a God somewhere, but a personal God? Personal God says you're supposed to be here at church on Sunday. Here's this, you're not supposed to do this. You know, I wrote 10 commandments. They don't want that. Well, the first was the water that turned into blood for 7 days. That was a direct attack. At least 10, I'm going to show you the different gods they attacked, at least some of them, because there are a lot of them that were intertwined. But the greatest of all the gods of the underworld was a guy by the name of Osiris, and the Nile was said to be his bloodstream. So God made it blood. And the fish died. And another one was Hapi, which was the Nile god. And they recently, there was a great earthquake. I think it was, I don't know, it was 200, 300 years, a few years after Christ, a couple decades. But it sunk a lot of Alexandria, at least the harbor area. And so a few years ago, National Geographic and that, they did a study and they went under water and they found the statue of the Hapi Nile god there. There are about 25 other deities that were affected just by that first water turning into blood. And God said, I can shut you down. And he showed it right off the bat. Who's the Lord? Then the frogs came second. Boys used to sing One More Night with a Frog, and it was an attack on this god, the frog-looking person, and it was actually a goddess, and she was the symbol of the resurrection and fertility. The lice came in, was a great discomfort, and by its parasites, and then you had the dog fly, or the flies it's called in the Bible, and this was a biting insect, and would lay its eggs, and at that point, God differentiated between Goshen, Israel, where they lived, and the rest of the plagues. And that was against the god Yachit, maybe a few others. The fifth one was Moraine, and that was the defeat of the cow goddess. They all died if they didn't bring in, take care of their cattle. They got this Moraine. The hail would also kill a bunch of them. Defeat of Apis, you may have heard that name before, is another one of the gods or goddesses. The boils was a defeat of the god of medicine. Then you had the hail, which was a defeat of these weather gods, these storm gods that they worship. The locusts, which ate up their harvest or much of it, anything that was left from the that was not wiped out by the hail, and was the goddess Mim. The darkness, which was in 3 days, the ninth of the plagues, defeated several gods, Ra being the powerful sun god, because the sun wasn't around to be shown, and a few other of these different gods that dealt with light or artificial light. And then the death of the firstborn, which was the 10th, and it was the final one that got Pharaoh's attention. Again, it was attack on the Ra god, attack on the goddess of the firstborn or of birth, and this ended the resistance of Egypt and Pharaoh. Pharaoh did ride along, make some compromises, and I heard a guy preach a message on it. He talked about the compromises of the world, because after each plague, usually, not always, but he would call in Moses and say, Moses, I'm going to let him go, and he wouldn't let him go, and his heart would get hardened. But on one of those occasions, he told Moses, he said, I'll let you go. Go worship God, because that's what Moses asked for. We want to go worship God. Let us out of the homeland and go to Mount Sinai. And he said, you can go worship God, just stay in the land. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. And he said, later on, he said, you can go, but just don't take all the kids, just you men go. Well, divide the family. And then he said, lastly, after another plague, he said, you can go, but just leave your possessions here. He said, no, we're going, we're taking everything. And so I heard a message on how that the world compromised. They want to divide the family. Boy, you see that. How so you can serve God, but don't tithe. Don't give of your possessions. And he made for a good point. I don't remember all the sermon. I just remember the points. God promises care. Do you ever see this verse? Chapter 11. And God is talking how he will protect Israel. And they're getting ready to leave. He says, but against any of the children of Israel shall not a dog move his tongue against man or beast. I mean, they're not going to raise an army that's going to defeat you. A dog's not even going to bother you. And that you may know how that the Lord put a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And I think we'll just stop there. And I got some neat more to teach on the crossing. But if we do that another time, we can do it. Did you put up Liliana's latest video there? Would you like to see? Anybody see her latest video? You may if you're on Facebook. Hopefully she'll be here. It's 2 minutes. That'll.
What was it called?
It's called. It's the only other PowerPoint on there, I believe. Something about Liliana. Second birthday, maybe. It just says second birthday. If not, hopefully you'll get to see her in person. She has made it to church for the last. She made 6 months, and so she should be here. We're trying to keep her record for her, unless something would happen. I don't know. Did you ever go to church if you're my age or older and they gave you a Sunday school pin? Remember the old Sunday school pins? And then they'd get all the, you know, if you had your 1 year and then your 2 year, and you'd have see these people with a big long. There was a song written about the guy who went 43 years. On the 44th year, he tripped on his Sunday school pin and he missed it. And is there music to it? Should be music on that one.
A lot of dirty times.
Well, that's not it. Not that one. Get rid of that one. That one we did for, I don't know what that one, but there should be one, because I looked at it last night. It should say 2 years. I think that was the one we did on prejudice. We did it for, Rhonda got a chance to speak to, you know, if you use what God gives you the opportunity, just use it for him. And, we have this little daughter, so we use it as an opportunity to show what God does. And that. And here about 3 months ago, well, I guess it was March, February, March, she had an opportunity to speak to about 50 nurses, and most of them were charge nurses from this area. And so we did a thing on prejudice. I think that's what was popping up. And we did it on, you remember that old song from the 70s, Short People? This is it. This is our thankfulness. And this was her 2-year-old video.
When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep. And I fall asleep counting my blessings. When my bankroll's getting small, I think of when I had none at all. And I fall asleep counting my blessings. I think about a nursery and I picture curly hairs. And one by one I count them as they slumber in their beds. If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep. And you'll fall asleep counting your blessings. Thank you. worried and you can't sleep. Count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessings.
Well, that was her two-year-old birthday, and I can't say enough thank you for all your prayers. Because that's how she's here. She's in a very small bracket, maybe 5% of those to be living. Let's pray, and we'll dismiss for a little break, and then on to the preaching. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for your blessings. Thank you for the life of this little girl and for what you've done for her. Thank you for what you did for your people and how we can take courage that you love us and care for us. Bless us in this time. Bless the preacher as he's away. Keep him safe. Bless him in services today. In Jesus' name, amen.